This is John Floridis, and you're listening to Musicians Spotlight. On this show, two of Montana's very favorite songwriters. We'll go into the program archives just a bit and check back with our visit with songwriter Martha Scanlon. But first, we have an encore broadcast of our program featuring Russ Nassett.
There's guns across the river aiming at you. Lawman on your trail, he'd like to catch you. Bounty hunters too, they'd like to get you. Oh, Billy, they don't like you to be so free. Camping out all night on the veranda, dealing cards till dawn in the hacienda. Up to Boot Hill, they'd like to send you. Oh, Billy, don't you turn your back on me. Playing around with some sweet señorita into her dark hallway, she will lead you. In some lonesome shadows, she would greet you. Oh, Billy, you're so far away from home. There's eyes behind the mirrors in empty places, bullet holes and scars between the spaces. There's always one more notch and 10 more paces. Ah, Billy, and you're walking all alone. They say Pat Garrett's got your number, so sleep with one eye open when you slumber. Every little sound just might be thunder, thunder from the barrel of his gun. There's always some new stranger sneaking glances, some triggered happy fool willing to take chances. Some old whore from San Pedro to make advances, advances on your spirit and your soul. The businessmen from Taos want you to go down, so they hired Pat Garrett to force a showdown. Billy, don't it make you feel so low down to be shot down by the man who was your friend? Play your grand finale down in some Tularosa alley, or maybe in some Rio Pecos valley. Oh, Billy, you're so far away.
This is John Floridis. Welcome to Musicians Spotlight. I'm very pleased to welcome back to the show Russ Nassett. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me up.
Yeah, great to have you back on the program. It has been a little while, a few years, I think.
Yeah, it's been a while. I can't remember exactly, but yeah.
Russ's music will undoubtedly be very familiar to a lot of our listeners, particularly in Montana and in the Western region. Now, Russ, remind me, you are from Montana originally, correct?
I was born in Minnesota.
Oh, you were born in Minnesota. Okay,
yeah, I'm trying to remember. We came out here when I was like 3 years old, so that makes me a native. I mean, it's a long time ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we've been here since my family came here in the early 50s. So.
And to the Missoula area?
We were up in the Highline. I grew up in Shelby.
Shelby, okay.
I came down to Missoula first time in like late 1969 or 68 to go to school. Drifted out to Oregon, spent about 15 years out there, started feeling like it was home, you know, until I came back to Montana, and then here I was back home. So I married a girl from Missoula, so we had that connection all the time still.
Okay. So. Now, for listeners who are not from Montana, explain to them what the High Line is,
because it's
an epic part of the state.
You know? It's the stretch that goes, I always say it stops at the mountains, but it goes from the mountains east, top of the state, Highway 2, which goes all the way to North Dakota. I suppose you can count North Dakota, too, because the Highway 2 keeps going over there.
But yeah, it does.
Pretty much one straight shot.
Now, if folks have not been in that area, how would you describe just the geography, the culture?
It varies, of course, like Montana, you know, but where I'm from, most people think it's flat and there's nothing there, but that's not true. You know, you don't see the river bottoms and stuff with coulees and river breaks and all that. It's a beautiful place to me. I go up there still frequently. I have a good friend with a beautiful ranch in the Sweetgrass Hills.
That's gorgeous.
Up on the border, Canadian border. So I've been hunting up there, and I started taking my sons, John and Sam, when they were like 10 years old. And every year since, we've gone to this same ranch and just was up there this last fall. So got my elk. Opening morning.
Yeah, for listeners outside of Montana, you know, that's good news.
That's
good news.
Yeah.
Got the elk.
Yeah, I love it. It's a great place. It was a great place to grow up in a little small town, Shelby, you know. At that time when I was a kid, it was like 4,000 people, which was just about right, you know. And it was a real kind of Mayberry existence, you know.
Yeah, what was going on for music there in Shelby when you were growing up?
There was a lot of action in Shelby in the town, in downtown area. There was like three bars of music regularly. My Aunt Pearl owned a club called the Sports Club, music five nights a week. Across the street, the Alibi Club had music five nights a week.
Now, I didn't grow up in Montana, but from what I understand, in those days, even though these were bars, it wasn't unusual for younger people to get in.
That's true.
Yeah. we know that can happen, you know, in other parts of the country as well, but it seems like that was kind of almost a cultural thing back in those days. And is that where you first got turned on to that kind of music, or was that in your household with records and that kind
of thing? Well, it was kind of born in me, I think. And I mean, I was turned on to music from the time I was in grade school, you know, when I first was exposed to it. From then on, I wanted more. And I figured that's what I want to do. I want to be a singer, guitar player, stuff. But I had a girl cousin that was being raised in a single-parent home, which was kind of unusual back then. And she was kind of getting in some mischief, trouble, whatever. So she came to live with my family. Well, she was just at the right age to have a record player and the latest 45s. I was about, you know, 6-7 years old. Also listened to radio all the time. Honky-tonk music at that time was great. Lefty Frizzell was on the radio, and I think the first thing I remember hearing consciously was Hank Williams riding in my parents' car. I must have been 3 or 4 years old, you know. But it just stuck me. Speaking of young people going in bars, yeah, I started going into bars when I was about 16 or something. Come up with some big story about, I work for the railroad and somewhere in Billings, and I'm just passing through, and I left my wallet and my and the guy go, all right, what do you want?
Way up in the crazy mountains where the wind blows chilly and cold. Up in the crazy mountains where the wind blows chilly and cold. I hit out last winter, starved and nearly froze. I've been all around the world. Up in the crazy mountains, that's where I made my stand. in the crazy mountains where I made my stand. With a rifle on my shoulder, a pistol in my hand, I've been all around the world. They arrested me on a muddy street, there they made me stand. Well, they arrested me on a muddy street, there they made me stand. With a pistol in my face, shackles on my hands, I've been all around the world. Took off my overcoat and I hung it on the wall. Well, I took off my overcoat and hung it on the wall. Took out my pistol, Lord knows I made them ball. I've been all around the world. So hang me, oh hang me, hang me good and high. Hang me, oh hang me, hang me good and high. Telegraph my mother, she can come to see me die. I've been all around the world. There's a mother and father, little sister, she makes three. There's mother and father, sister, she makes three. Follow down to the gallows and see what's left of me. I've been all around the world. So hang me, oh hang me, and I'll be dead and gone. I'll be dead and gone. Wouldn't mind the hanging, the laying in the grave so long. I've been all around the world. Lord, I've been all around this world.
Russ, let's talk about this most recent project. Okay. That we're going to be using some samples from. And the project, a solo project, is called Key Was Singing This Song.
Yeah.
And let's talk about what's going on here.
Well, I wanted to make a traditional album of folk songs, and I decided I'd do it like Western-themed, cowboy folk songs. So that was the starting point. And then I decided, well, instead of just sticking to traditional cowboy music, I could do some little more contemporary stuff. Like, not contemporary to me is like from the 60s or whatever. So it's 50 years old. I mean, you know, I did an Ian Tyson song, and I did a Dylan song off that movie soundtrack, Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid thing.
Sure. When you are interpreting other people's songs, is there a different space that you go to as a narrator of those songs as opposed to when you're doing your own material?
No, I don't think so. You know, I just love the songs. Sometimes you get accused of, oh, he's just playing cover songs, you know. I don't think of them as cover songs, you know. I think of them from the traditional folk music point of view. It's a tradition, you know. Like Jack Elliott has recorded the same songs for the last 50 years, you know, over and over. He changes them.
Yeah.
And they get passed down to somebody else. I think it's an important tradition, here I go again, but an important part of American music, you know, that folk music, somebody got to keep it alive, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be, I mean, plus there's so many great songs that other people wrote. I mean, I don't do all my crappy songs, you know. Everybody wants to do nothing but original, you know. And I love writing songs. I've done that really hugely prolific, but I'm a music lover, John.
This is John Floridis. You're listening to Musicians Spotlight, and I'm speaking today with Russ Nassett. Russ, let me ask you this. What are you learning at this point about songwriting, having done it for as long as you have?
Man, I don't know if I'm learning. I wish I was, because I'd probably get a lot more songs written. But
I mean, any kind of new revelations as you're going through that process of writing, accumulating songs?
I don't know, man. I mean, I just I don't sit down and do it as a regular thing, you know, which I should do probably. I don't know. I just wait for inspiration, man, and then write whatever comes in my head. Sometimes they come almost fully formed, you know. sometimes I wake up and I got something going in my head, so I couldn't count that as anything I thought of. I mean, I thought of it in a dream, maybe, but
that counts.
Oh yeah, I guess. Sometimes, though, to me, those are good songs. Some of the best ones. It's like God gave it to you or something, you know.
You wouldn't be the first guest on the show that would have said that.
yeah, I imagine. You know, yeah, there are a lot of people like. You know, from Dylan to everybody else, said they just, if it's in the air, sometime it'll land on you.
Now, when you say fully formed, are we talking about you hear the music and the words combined?
Yeah. Oh. Sometimes I've heard the music, and I think it's going to be about some certain subject, and then realize after I sit up and start playing it, some other words will come to me, a different story or whatever, but that happened to me when my late ex-drummer, Kenny Field, was with us for 18 years, I think. Unfortunately, his wife passed about 5 years ago. And so the song ended up being about her, you know. She mm-hmm. was right before she passed away, and I wrote a song for her. Mm-hmm. And actually played it for her. He told me one time, you better get out here. He lived outside of town. Because the time is coming. Mm-hmm. And if you're ever going to play that song, do it for her now. It was very difficult, but...
Oh, man.
Yeah, man. But... God did it, so. Mm-hmm. So I got to play. And she was a musician, too, so I hope she appreciated it.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Spirits on the water move without a sound, upside down, round and round, temporary like a shadow lifting off the ground. Finding your way back home. Drifting in a dream past the old blue moon. Rainy afternoons when the lilacs bloom. Waiting by the window of a quiet room. Back home, and love will wait for you, 'cause love stays true no matter what you do, and the stars will light the path for you, finding your way back home. Tomorrow lives forever far beyond the skies. Whispered sighs, bittersweet goodbyes. Someday in the morning, in the bright sunrise, you'll find your back home. And love will wait for you, 'cause love stays true no matter what you do, and the stars will light the path for you when you find your way back home. When you find your way back home.
Russ, I'm trying to do the math here and think, like, how many years have you been performing music live?
When I first went out to Oregon, I started playing solo, like folk singing stuff out there. And that was in about 72 or something like that. So what does that make? That's 40-some years. I mean, 47 years?
Yeah, geez, man. As we record this.
But when I joined, the first band I joined was in 1974. So I've been in bands for 40-some years, 45 years or so. And Sam's been with me, you know, my son Sam, he's been with me now for almost 18 years, you know, that's something like that.
Yeah.
19 years.
Jeez,
he's got a whole career and he's got a whole life in.
Yeah, he does.
A life of music.
He's a grown man.
No kidding.
As you are performing music now, in this point in your life, what are you learning about performing these days? Any new insights?
I know it all, man.
I know you know it all. Anybody who's seen you perform knows you know it all.
No, I know. I really don't. I know nothing, to tell you the truth, but... What was the question?
The question was, what's your learning?
Well, what have I learned?
I guess maybe another way to phrase that is, I mean, anybody who's ever seen you perform, you know, they can tell you make a connection with your music. They connect with the audience, whether it's solo or whether it's with a full band.
Yeah.
Maybe talk a little bit about how you keep doing that over the years. How do you make sure that that stays fresh, that connection with your audience?
Well, I still love playing. You know, I mean, when I get up to play, you know, sometimes I holler at them. Sounds like... You know, if they're not reacting or something, I'm trying to get people, you know, I want to connect, you know.
Uh-huh. Hollering at the audience?
Well, not in a gentle way. Encouraging them, yeah. Let me say it, put it that way. But yeah, I'm...
get off your butts and dance.
Yeah, I mean, come on.
I'm people, Russ Nassin here.
Right, this so what? It's harder to play live music for audiences. I mean, you have if you've been playing long enough and you have a certain following, then they're, God bless them. They're there for you.
Yeah.
But new people, sometimes you're playing a solo gig, and I'd be playing my, you know, singing my little heart out. 10 feet away, there's five young girls sitting at a table, and most of them got cell phones out, and I could not even exist as far as they're concerned, you know. And I just want to say, hey, turn around, look, I'm over here. Listen to this. It's music, you know. You ever heard of it?
Yeah, live breathing human being.
You know, right, I'm a grumpy old man now.
Well, but that experience, I mean, setting aside those moments, and I think all musicians have that at one time or another, with that frustration of trying to engage people and they're not engaging back. But that live experience, yeah, we're inundated with all these different avenues of music, like you say, technology, and it's ubiquitous everywhere you go. But nothing can replace that experience of hearing musicians live. That's why it does survive, and it seems like that's always been where you make your best connections.
Yeah.
As a performer.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I should say that I'm talking about people ignoring me or whatever, but I gotta say, God bless the people in Missoula. They turn out for us still, and that's why we're there.
Yeah.
And it's great to have. You know, see people you've seen over and over, and you try to get new people and stuff. Mm-hmm. But they respond to us for the most part, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not an applause hound, but in a way, you know, I mean, it's nice for people to recognize what you're doing up there, you know, and to give you some feedback and to get up and dance and have a good time. And or when I'm doing my solo gig, to sit there and listen. There's a few gigs around where I play the Draftworks every now and then, and I like to play there on Sundays because it's a little quieter, smaller crowds, but they're all listening, you know. And I think it's wonderful. It's like the old folk music days, you know. That's what they come to. They came here to listen to you sing, so I try to sing something for them.
Well, there's a way high up in the Siren Peaks where the yellow pines grow tall. Rusty Jigs and Sandy Sam had a roundup camp last fall. Had the ponies and running irons, maybe a dog or two. And they bound the brand of a lop-eared calf to come within their view. Many a lop-eared doggy that wouldn't hush up by day. Had a long ear swiggled in his old high horse in the most artistic way. I said, Rusty Jigs to Sandy Sam as I throw this sick old down. I'm tired of cowboyography and I figures I'll go to town. Saddle their ponies and I struck on my loaf for there weren't no sight of a ride. Them was the days when an old cowpunch could howl up his dry inside. Started in the Kentucky bar at the head of the whiskey roll, and they ended up in the deep old house some 40 drinks spilled. Said a move and turned them around and it goes with the other way. I tell you the Lord forsaken truth, them boys got drunk that day. And as they was heading back to camp, packing a mighty good load, who should they meet but the devil himself come prancing down the road. And the devil he said, you cowboy skunks, you better go hunt your holes. For I've come up from hell's rim rocks to gather in your souls. Said rush the jigs to the devil, though I know we're tight. No devil ever took an old cowpunch without one kind of a fight. Straight and true. Caught the devil right around the horns, took his daddy's too. Now Sandy Sam was a real man with his gut line cold up neat. So he shakes it out and builds him a loop when he caught the devil's hind feet. Well, they stretched him out on the desert ground while the iron was getting hot. Cropped and swallowed, forked his horns, branded him up a lot. Well, they tied his hands and feet up tight, tied knots in his tail for a joke. Rolled off and left him bellerin' there, necked up to a yellow jack oak. If you're ever up in the Siree Peaks and you hear one hell of a way, you'll know it's nothing but the devil himself raising hell about the knots in his tail.
This is John Floridas. You're listening to Musicians Spotlight, and I'm speaking today with Russ Nassett. Obviously, you're still cranking out new stuff as well as reinterpretations of traditional music.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the passion's still there. Do you have a long-term plan where you want to see things go, or just is it just kind of a keep on pushing?
I'm going to keep on pushing, you know, as long as if it comes to the point where people say, well, we want younger musicians around here. This, you're too old for this joint, man. Then I guess I'm out. But as long as people hire me, and as long as people come see me sing, and listen to me play the guitar, then I'm going to keep on going as far as long as I can, you know. I'm feeling my age a little bit, you know, but I've also calmed down a little bit, so I try to take care of myself these days as opposed to how I used to be. We used to, you know, all night honky-tonking, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't do that anymore.
So almost, some concessions.
Almost.
Making some concessions.
Exactly. My idol musically has always been Dylan, you know. And, like, he's out there all the time still. He's got to be getting close to 80 or something. I don't know. Mm-hmm. You know, the Stones and people from our generation, mm-hmm, or our era. I'm not trying to make you as old as me because I know you're not. But, you know, some of those people are still
behind.
Going. Yeah, John Prine, you know. He's. I always think of, well, those guys are older than me. They're still doing it. So I'm going to keep on going, too.
Well, and, you know, the audience for that music, as they're going to age as well, and they're always going to, and so you're going to be, you know, hopefully bringing in younger audiences,
right,
as well.
Yeah.
But that the audience that appreciates all that kind of music is always going to be appreciating that kind of music.
The only problem is they don't go out as often as they used to.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I run into people and, you know, wherever, but, and they say, gee, are you playing these days? And I go, yeah, tell them a little bit of what I'm always out there playing, but,
mm-hmm.
They said, gee, we'd love to come see you, but we can't stay up that late. And I'm like, well, you got to do what I do. I take a nap before the gig, you know.
Sure.
Get an hour in, and then I'm, you know, go downtown until 3 in the morning.
But uh-huh.
You got to rest up. You want to play, act like a young man.
We're going to refer listeners to this website. The specific address would be reverbnation.com/Russ Nassett and the Revelators. Great talking with you again, Russ.
Hey, man. Thanks
great
for having
on the
me
show.
I enjoyed it. I always like to come talk to you.
Well, we look forward to talking to you again down the road.
Right on.
A true Montana legend, singer-songwriter Russ Nassett. In the next half hour, we'll go back a bit into the Musician Spotlight Archives and our 2016 visit with Martha Scanlon. Welcome back to Musicians Spotlight. In this half of the program, we go into the Musicians Spotlight Archives and our 2016 visit with Martha Scanlon.
Stranger could have figured on a ridge above the trees. Shadow moving closer, stirring something. Round about twilight, we camped down by the creek. horses uneasy. Stranger rode out of the trees.
This is John Floridis. Welcome to Musicians Spotlight. I'm very pleased to be welcoming back to the show Martha Scanlon. How are you doing, Martha?
Good. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, great to have you back in the studio talking shop with us. Of course, our listeners will be very familiar with Martha's work as a singer-songwriter, going back to the days with the Real-Time Travelers. And those who are familiar with the history of Montana music scene know that it goes back even further to the Mammoth Bakery. Open mics in Missoula.
That's right, many years ago.
It's the first time I ever saw you perform.
Yeah,
with the what became the Real-Time Travelers, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. Well, Thomas and I were playing at that point. Thomas from Real-Time Travelers, and yeah, I was morbidly shy. I still am. It's shocking.
And yet, somehow a career of great magnitude has occurred. Somehow. and really a terrific career. When I look at the stuff that you've done, one of the things that I really admire about what you've done with your work is you have, beyond just some of the commercial success in terms of getting a song on soundtrack for a major motion picture in Cold Mountain, touring with the group with Alison Krauss. I'm trying to remember the name of the...
The Great High Mountain Tour.
It always comes down to, for me, the respect that other musicians and other writers have for your work. I keep coming back to that. And, you know, that says so much about the journey that you've traveled since the Mammoth Bakery open mic days. It's really remarkable. We're going to be talking about Martha's most recent album, which now is over a year old. And the name of the album, of course, is Shape of Things Gone Missing, The Shape of Things to Come. Let's talk about the title of that album. I'm very compelled by that. It's a beautiful title.
That was kind of interesting. You know, I've been living on this ranch for quite a while now. It's a small family ranch in southeastern Montana. And my cabin there, every once in a while I'd go on tour and come back. And I came back from tour and wrote that down on a piece of paper. You know how sometimes you write down song lines or something, and I just wrote it down and I kept it in my bag and carried it around with me for a couple of years. And then it started occurring to me that that was the name of the next record. And I didn't know what it was going to be like. I didn't have the songs written. It just was kind of, it's kind of a funny way for me, the way that songs come together and become about different things and evolve over the years. And
so it was not a situation where the title came and in some way you felt like you needed to have the songs fit that general theme necessarily.
No.
Huh.
No, I was like, I wonder how all this is going to work out. I have no idea. But there is kind of a theme of things shifting and changing, and there's so much of that landscape and that lifestyle of ranching that has shapes missing and shapes coming and kind of these cycles. I was walking over here and listening to the record because I hadn't listened to it in a while, and it's so just interesting the way that songs now, even since I wrote them, are about different things.
Mm-hmm.
So
I've talked to a lot of writers that seem to have that same experience. You know, songs are not static.
Yeah, and I kind of wonder if almost their interaction with other people's lives shifts them.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
with an audience or with the world, or I don't really know. It does seem like something comes alive when you release them, when you play them for one other person.
Yeah.
Something shifts immediately, you know.
Well, if you think about it, I guess that's the completion of what they say, you know, in order to have music, you need someone to compose the song, someone to perform the song, and someone to listen to the song, generally beyond the person who did the first two things, you know. So, I mean,
right.
so that would make sense that that's really where the birth of the song really happens.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm still kind of figuring it out.
Gonna pay 2,000 change, someday pay quarter and three, just to buy some gasoline. Pair my best blue jeans, slide a handkerchief of an El Camino, pour it down to Abilene. I can see your city lights burning like a corner of the desert sky, shining like the smile on a hometown rodeo queen. One way ticket, no turning back. I'm coming to Abilene.
Martha, I want to go back to the ranch situation because I know we've covered this before in our interviews, but just mm-hmm. briefly, let's just touch on that because this is obviously very vital to not only the writing and everything you're doing musically, but also just your lifestyle these days.
Yeah, yeah. And in the past year, honestly, I mean, I feel embarrassed saying that because The people on the ranch are, you know, everybody works so hard, and obviously I'm here talking to you and not...
baling hay.
Not feeding cows and calves and calving and all of that. So it's just been a really extraordinary experience. And, oh, I don't know. I think it's really opened my eyes to the way that people and landscape are so entwined. Yeah. And how important those agricultural places are for all of us, in that sense that they kind of keep us grounded to a place, even if we're just eating the food and not even thinking about those people.
Yeah.
You know, it's still part of us. It's still part of our story.
And this is the Tongue River area we're talking about, which is obviously very much in the news in Montana for all kinds of reasons, environmentally and in terms of energy, resource extraction, stuff like that. So this is, even though it's a remote place, is still very much in the consciousness of the state, and by virtue of that, in a lot of ways, in the country in general.
Yeah, and I think it's really an interesting place in that regard, because there's so much history that belongs to all of us. I mean, there's, you know, like 8 miles from the ranch is where Crazy Horse's last battle was. There's a lot of Northern Cheyenne history, Crow history, a lot of stories that are kind of embodied in that landscape and that hold people to that landscape. And even where we run cattle, we have special names for places that are all connected to people who lived there or something that happened there, or stories that wouldn't be found on maps, but it's this real intimacy with that place.
Martha, I want to go back to talking a little bit more in detail about the process of recording The Shape of Things Gone Missing, The Shape of Things to Come. My understanding is that you approach this a little bit differently than you have in the past, in terms of just going into the studio, the people that you were working with, and kind of the attitude that you had about how to approach the recording as more of a live kind of feel to it. Am I correct in that regard?
Yeah, and it seems like all my recording projects end up being that way, and kind of by default. Like when the story, Tongue River Stories, a lot of those recordings were done outside, so... there wasn't a lot of room to fix things. It would be like, well, let's use the take that doesn't have the wind.
Yeah. I forgot about that concept. Yeah.
But for this one, John Neufeld, who plays with me on the road and is a great producer and produced this record, and we wanted it to be really improvisational and really live. There was something neat about taking songs that were from this wild place and having that wildness come through in the studio in that sense, and just the improvisation.
Well, so, I was going to ask, beyond the arrangement of instruments, was there more writing that took place once the songs came there? I guess I'm assuming that when you come into a studio, you've got the song fairly well written in terms of the form, first chorus, bridge kind of stuff. You've got the lyrics together. That the song probably has a life of its own at that moment, as a song that you can perform on as a soloist. And then in this situation, it sounds like what you're saying is maybe there was more expansion than normal of the song. Is that?
Yeah, I'm used to, like, I write songs and I finish them and I don't mess with them again. They're kind of done. And I've gone into the studio and recorded them with people. And in this situation, you know, some of the songs just weren't finished. And at first I was like, oh my God, I'm like driving to Portland, like, I've got to finish these songs. What have I done? And it ended up being just right, you know, and it allowed the other musicians to kind of come in. And there's one song in particular that's called August is a Gate. And it was mostly done. There were a bunch of verses but it didn't quite have a heart yet. It didn't feel done to me. And we were kind of messing around with it before we recorded it. And Jenny had this idea for a break with the piano. And I cut out a couple of verses, and all of a sudden it started to take shape and it made sense. And then when we listened back to that tape, like, I just started crying. Like, it was, the song kind of found its heart. And it became what it was in that moment with those people. And that hadn't happened for me before. And that was really cool.
August is a gate. setting, the rising of the sun. One day there's nighthawks, then they're gone.
This is John Floridas. You're listening to Musicians Spotlight. I'm speaking today with singer-songwriter Martha Scanlon. We're talking, among other things, about her most recent album, The Shape of Things Gone Missing, The Shape of Things to Come. I wanted to ask about any tunes in particular that a year later, after this has come out, that are maybe standing out to you, because I know that sometimes it takes a while to kind of digest what you've put out there, and songs mm-hmm. that maybe stood in the forefront of your mind and heart and soul at the release, maybe move aside a little bit for songs that you didn't even realize had a deeper meaning or a relevance of song. As we talked about, they're not static. So mm-hmm. there's a way that songs can sometimes have a relevance a year later. So just kind of reflecting back now, a year later, any songs in particular that are standing out to you?
August as a Gate was standing out in that sense, just walking over here and listening to it. I mean, I sound like I walk around listening to my own music all the time.
No, but I was realizing after I asked that question that you just got done telling me earlier that you were cramming like for an exam, going back to listen to your own album. So hopefully it's fresh in your mind.
Yeah, well, I guess that The Shape of Things Gone Missing, The Shape of Things to Come is, that evolves a lot for me. That song actually came out of, it's been a few years ago now, and Levon Helm and his daughter Amy were friends of mine, and when he was passing, when he was dying, they'd taken him off life support, and they weren't telling people that yet. So it was just kind of this really quiet time for her and her dad. And they were in New York at the hospital, and I was at the ranch. And there's this, and it was this time of year, you know, kind of the spring. It was actually April. And some of the first flowers to come up on the ranch, there's buttercups, and then there are these little white flowers called Stars of Bethlehem.
Mm-hmm.
And some people call them Johnny Jump Ups, but yeah. There are these beautiful little tender lilies, and those were blooming. And it's kind of after the really hard frosts are over and winter so hard on animals, and just the first green grass is coming up, and it's this tender time. Anyway, so that I was thinking about them in that time, and kind of this time of vigil, and that was part of that song. And that is kind of interwoven in different things. I think about that this time of year.
I woke up to the sound of horses, sound of the horses running by in the night. Underneath the darkness of darkness, woke up to horses just before the first light.
Martha, I have to ask, do you still have the typewriter that you used to use to write from?
I do, and it's still missing the letter J.
Oh, was this J? I thought it was the letter H.
Oh, now I have to think about that. I can't remember if it's a J or if anyone has an antique J or an H. I'm still I'm still seeking one. I do. I still have the typewriter.
Okay.
And since I've been away from the ranch for the most part touring in the last year, and you know, I also want to report that my driving skills and my social skills are a little bit better than they were when I would go on tour from leaving a very remote place.
And how do you?
Or so says John Neufeld.
Okay. So what do you attribute that to?
Being around people more.
Immersion therapy.
Yeah.
I never noticed your social skills to be lacking to begin with.
And sometimes I would, you know, I'd drive 3 hours to Billings and then fly to, you know, like LaGuardia. And suddenly
that's a little jarring.
Yeah.
What kind of stuff are you listening to for fun? I know you're listening to Beyonce. We've talked about that before the interview started.
My one Beyonce song that's on my phone.
I'll just say I like the fact that you listen to Beyonce because I think, you know, people get into this preconception of what they think musicians who play a particular type of music might listen to. And that pretty much blows out any preconceptions anybody I think might have about your listening tastes.
Yeah. And I love, one thing I love about touring with John Neufeld, and I think part of why he's such a great producer is that he listens to so many different kinds of music. I mean, that's how I ended up with a Beyonce song on my phone, because he was just, you know, dorking out on the production of this song. You know, and I was listening to it, and it's like, that is amazing. A lot of Beatles. I never really delved into the Beatles, and I was listening to Revolver the other day, and I was just like, this is unbelievable. So, yeah, different things kind of bubble up in different times. There's things that I lean into that I grew up on, and my parents had great record collections, so that's always kind of there. But then, you know, like D'Angelo, I love his music. There's just a lot of different kind of stuff out there. So
that's great. MarthaScanlon.com is where you can go to find out more about what Martha is up to. The Shape of Things Gone Missing, The Shape of Things to Come is the most recent recording, and that follows The West Was Burning as well as Tongue River Stories. The thing that strikes me again, I'm going to come back to this, those three albums, all of them hold up and are going to hold up. They're not tied to anything stylistically, to any kind of trends. They're albums that are going to have that same quality 20, 30, 50 years from now. And I think that's attributable to your work, your writing, and your skill in many areas. So you've done well, my friend. Thanks so much for being on the show again.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to Musicians Spotlight, this program featuring two of Montana's favorite singer-songwriters, Russ Nassett and Martha Scanlon. If you'd like to contact us, you can do so through the Montana Public Radio website, mtpr.org, as well as through our own website, musicianspotlight.org. You can also find us online on Facebook and on Twitter. Our program is available as a podcast from those websites, as well as through iTunes. Musicians Spotlight is a production of Montana Public Radio.